In the studio with a recap, I have school board members J.J. Ellers and Andrew Kaplan. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Leslie.
Hey, let's start with fencing. There's just still a lot of people challenging that decision-making process to fence all of the elementary schools. Andrew, you have told us before that this is the safest things for our students. School district patron Nick Miller asking for a rundown of how the school board made its decision. Apparently hasn't received any feedback. Will he be getting some answers that he's looking for?
Well, it wasn't a topic at the school board meeting, and what I'll say about Mr. Miller is he's made some unique demands in not quite the most appropriate or respectful manner, but he's requested some documents that seem somewhat arbitrary and weren't part of our process. But what we have offered to Mr. Miller, as well as everyone, is to go through our thought process. And talk about how we arrived at our decisions. And we've had several community meetings. We've had one at every elementary school, including Jeremy, which we have fences up and actually surrounding the entire Jeremy campus. And each of our schools is different. Jeremy obviously has some pretty close proximity to the highway, but, we have, a fence surrounding the entire campus there, and we've received zero complaints about Jeremy. And I think part of that is that, again, all of our schools are unique, and Jeremy is one that isn't surrounded by homes. Mm-hmm. And so I think what you have is that in the neighborhoods, and specifically Parley's and Trailside, McPullen is less of a controversial issue in that I think the neighbors there are happy to have fences and gates delineating the property from the school. And that's also obviously a much larger campus as well when you consider the high school and Treasure. But, Trailside and Parley's are, they're neighborhood schools, and they're right up against neighbors who have lived there for a long time. And I think any time that you say, okay, we're going to change how our campus looks, and that affects, access to people's, recreation or what they've been using as their backyards, it becomes controversial. But what we do know is that this is best practice. There's a lot of misinformation out there. There's some petitions that are being out there. There's a lot of Facebook posts. What I'd encourage is that anyone who is interested or feels strongly one way or the other contacts their school board representative and asks questions and gets answers. I mean, we're very open about why we're doing this. It's something that's, as I've mentioned, is supported by local law enforcement. It's supported by our principals, our counselors, our teachers. It's supported on a national basis by Department of Homeland Security, FEMA, National School Securities Council. There's a lot of stuff out there where people are like, well, there's no fence at Sandy Hook. Well, there is a fence at Sandy Hook, and there's another one going in. Our community is different. We do all live here because it is safe. The fence is not being put up to deter shooters. We're doing a number of other things with our buildings to make them more secure from intruders, including renovating the entrances to all of our buildings, upgrading the interior and exterior doors, doing a ton of training, visitor management system, all different types of things. The fence merely keeps the kids at the school during the day and keeps unwanted visitors from coming through the backyards of our school.
So back to Mr. Miller's request. Mm-hmm. I mean, did he file that a grammar request?
No, he hasn't. He demanded a FEMA worksheet from 2008 that was written by FEMA that is a due diligence document. We do very similar due diligence around safety of all of our schools on an annual basis. But he wanted that specific document, which we didn't have. And then when pressed, he, demanded it and was rather insulting. So we're all trying to do the best thing for safety for our kids. And, I'm happy to talk to anyone, as is any of our board members and the superintendent and the building principals. The building principals have been integral in this and had meetings with multiple parents, and we'll continue to do that and work towards a solution.
All right. So despite those that are unhappy with it, the board it's a done deal. You're moving on.
Yeah. I mean, this was something that was voted on months ago. What we are doing with the community is we're saying, okay, look, every school is different. At Parley's, the Snyder's Mill HOA wants to have the fence match their HOA fence, and we're open to that. Same at Trailside. They have a ranch style fencing, you know, on one of their borders, and they want it to look like that. We're open to that. We're also open to putting in shrubbery and trees and being good neighbors, right? We're not trying to put anyone out, and we realize that in order to be good neighbors, we have to help our help the people who have lived there. So, we're putting in a fence. It's a very small part of the safety program that we're implementing. So it's a shame, really, for all of us that there's so much energy, and especially negative energy, being put towards this when, you know, people can focus. There's a lot of things we can work on as a community, including mental health and other larger, more difficult subjects that I'd prefer people to focus their energy on that. I mean, this is something that, you know, once it's done, will, I don't think the kids are going to really notice, right? It's not the kids who are complaining about this. It's the neighbors, and I understand why. And, you know, we'll continue to work with the community to minimize impact.
Yeah. Also, let me get your response to the bond election in South Summit School District. I mean, this was really, we're talking about $58 million. It was to build a high school and then to retrofit some of the other school facilities. What do you think? I mean, this is basically for a school building. Your response, JJ?
I was surprised, but when you step back and look at it, I think it's a, you know, old growth versus new growth, or old, you know, people have been there for a while, and possibly even some backlash of a feeling of overflow from Park City that's buying over there and supporting our kids or what. But that's not the way districts work, and it just shows that there's a lot of work that has to be done. We learned that from our bond failure, that to really get everybody on board and to come together and try to find the common grounds. And it's I don't know. I haven't had a whole lot of time to think about it, being last night and yeah, really not knowing what all
it was
that.
Relatively close, and we've been there. You know, we know as a mm-hmm. district how hard it is, and I think there was another bond in Ogden that I think failed as well. And, I think it's – we live in a day where, you know, everyone is very informed, and it's not as simple anymore as putting a bond on the ballot and having it be passed, right? There's a demand for accountability from leadership and from districts. And, you know, they're doing $58 million, which is a pretty big bond. They haven't done a bond there in 30 years. And so you come out with $58 million and, you know, you're going to get some pushback. So, ours was $56 million and we got crushed on it. And this is a larger tax-based community. So, I'm not totally shocked given what happened here. I think it's a shame. You know, they have overcrowding. And, you know, if you could drive over there and you look at the development that's happening on the other side of the Jordanelle and in various neighborhoods, I mean, that's not stopping anytime soon. So I feel for them this morning for mm-hmm. sure.
Let's see, school board meeting yesterday, two interviews conducted for Julie Eihausen's open board seat, much more civilized than the last time around, no profanity or threats. But JJ, why is it taken until the next board meeting to decide on the new board member?
We needed to do it at an open meeting, and it just seemed she's not resigning until February 5th, so there was no real hurry to fill the seat. We still have a voting board member in that seat, so it didn't feel like we needed to try to, with all the other things going on, to add yet another meeting on our agenda to vote for a new board member. So it'll be on the 21st.
Yeah. And you're able to deliberate behind closed doors as in choosing this before you make a final vote.
No. No, we're able to think about it. You know, we're able to have, you know, conversations. JJ and I, as two board members, could talk about it. But the vote will be in public.
Well, I understand the vote will be, but isn't it?
No, we cannot deliberate as a board behind closed doors about
this. It's not personnel?
No. Not in terms of the definition.
Right.
The personnel definition is more related to an employee, their conduct or mental health of an employee. The election or the appointment of a school board member is not considered a closed session topic.
We have talked it over with the lawyer multiple times trying to figure out exactly how to do it. So
what are you looking for in a candidate, JJ?
I'm looking for somebody that can add to the school board and they both do. They both bring, both of our candidates, I think, bring great strengths to the school board. And so
I think we have a pretty cohesive board right now. You know, we're very fortunate. We've had a lot of turnover, but the board is unified in its objectives, and I think we want someone, you know, especially this time around, who's going to be committed to the long term, and that, you know, that the actual seat is only open till, you know, the end of next year. So whoever it is who's appointed is going to have to run starting this spring. And, you know, that was a question that we asked, and I think is very important, is that it's someone who's committed to the long term. And I think we want someone who's involved in schools right now, who either has, you know, is in the schools right now or has been through, you know, multiple experiences in the schools and is familiar and knowledgeable, so that when they come in, they can be effective really quickly. And we need someone to, you know, to come in and hit the ground running, especially because their term is only going to last about a year.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, when we look at losing Julie, she was the one board member who always had a different perspective, or at least, you know, it wasn't that she disagreed with the board, but she always brought a different perspective to the discussion. And I guess it's like, I mean, are you looking for somebody who just agrees with the rest of you?
No, I don't think we certainly don't agree on everything.
No.
JJ and I were just debating about, we were talking in the context of the South Summit bond, we were talking about growth, right? Mm-hmm. And JJ's, you know, always had a much more conservative growth view than I have with regards to the district. And we battle on this all the time,
in
meetings,
yeah,
and outside. And, you know, we all disagree on a lot of things. I think, you know, what's important is that we have our debates and our discussions in the open meetings, and then, you know, we leave those meetings, you know, supporting whatever the board decision is. And that's, you know, that's our plan. We're certainly not looking for someone who agrees with us. And, you know, to be honest, if you look at the questions we asked, we didn't ask any questions necessarily around policy. We asked, you know, how you would handle discussion around a tax increase and things that are going to be topical, but nothing around, you know, which side are you on a bond or on a, you know, on what do you want the high school to look like? I mean, you know, all of those things. Look, at the end of the day, we represent our community's views, and that's our job. And so what we personally think is kind of secondary.
Business administrator, let's talk more about growth. Business administrator Todd Halber gave a presentation on the closed school projections using numbers from the October headcounts, running some 9 different scenarios of how the board could count heads, class sizes, teachable space. So is this an attempt to figure out how to get all of the schools closed? I mean, is that the idea here?
Yeah, that's what we're looking at. Mm-hmm. You know, we've heard quite a bit from the community that's, you know, that's their interest. And, you know, what the statute says is the board has leeway and discretion in terms of determining what's teachable space and when. So, for example, in the high school, do you count a classroom that's being used as prep by teachers as an open classroom for teachable space based on a block schedule? Well, in the past we have. I don't think we're going to, you know, the proposal right that's out there for the board right now is we're not going to do that any longer. For the elementary schools, do you consider a class that's set up for dance as a teachable classroom? I.e., can you pull in a second grade class and put them in there? In the past, we've said yes. Or a computer lab, for example, can we put a third grade class and teach math in there? Well, you can't really when you have things set up a different way. And so, you know, we're going to have a proposal from Todd next board meeting, and then the board will give him instructions on how to assess what is a classroom and what is not.
Mm-hmm. So what we saw this year, no growth in the student population. In fact, down by 100 students. So does the district have plans to make student growth projections before moving ahead with all of this master planning that's going to happen at the end of the
year? We have a demographic study that's starting shortly. We have the RFQ out. I'm not sure exactly where that is, but that's...
I think
they've been selected and they're starting. Mm-hmm. And so that's a huge part of what we do, right? And it's not just overall growth. It's what neighborhoods are growing, which neighborhoods are shrinking. What are the ages of kids? You know, are there bubbles in certain years that are going to move through and our district is growing or shrinking and, you know, and all of that? And what are the patterns of employment? And I mean, there's so many different variables that are going to be looked at. And it's, of course, it's paramount to what we're doing.
Real quick, an update was given by Eric Esquivel, who's done an outreach to the Latino community. JJ, can you talk about what you learned there that you maybe didn't know before?
I think he had a good good amount of people attend it for the what it was, and learned more that we can do some more outreach like that with them, and that they're open to that. I think one of the biggest takeaways for us was They said that when parents are told that it's a mandatory meeting, they're more likely to show up than just as a voluntary meeting. It's a little bit different cultural-wise. So that was a big takeaway for me. And also that we need to continue reaching out to them on their grounds that you know, until there's a certain amount of comfort, it's very hard to bring both communities together. And so having the outreach with them specifically makes it easier for them to express their feelings and concerns and understand what's being told to them.
Yeah, well, I think you heard that many Latino parents working three jobs,
right,
during the winter season. And so it's like, in terms of scheduling, we need to do it maybe spring and fall, huh?
Right, that's what he said, shoulder season.
Yeah, and also
the
have early morning and late night meetings and, you know, have translators always ready. And also how we communicate, you know, not just from a language perspective, but which media we're using to communicate. So text messaging versus Facebook, or text messaging versus email or web blog, things like that. So it's, you know, it's something that we... you know, it's a quarter of our students and our families and our community, and we want to make sure that we're communicating better. And, you know, as you know, as well as anyone, communication is one of our focuses. It's one of our community's values. And certainly with regards to the Latino community, we need to do a better job. And we're going to continue to work with Eric and with Melinda to do that.
So do we have somebody who can text in Spanish?
We have our texts are going out in Spanish. So mm-hmm. all of our kind of blast communications are going out. I think it's more when we have community meetings, or we have whether it's a meeting about school safety, or it's a meeting about dual language, or, you know, whatever it may be, to have someone there who's translating. It's important, and we haven't done that consistently in the past. And you know, certain people find it disruptive, and, you know, we have to figure out what the easiest way is to do it and what the most efficient way is. And we're going to continue to work on improving that.
Okay. JJ Ehlers and Andrew Kaplan, thanks for coming in this morning.
Thanks.
The Park City Council meeting and work session tomorrow starting at 4:25. The regular meeting, of course, at 6 o'clock at the City Council Chambers in the Marsac Building. In the studio with the rundown, I have City Manager Diane Foster, along with Parking and Fleet Supervisor Kenzie Colson. We were just talking off air about how you can't talk about parking enough. Lots of changes coming, but we'll get to that, Kenzie, in just a minute. First, Diane, your reaction to the election results.
First and foremost, I want to say thank you to all of the candidates for running. I think putting yourself out there it's a really tough thing, and it was a really nice campaign, and we're so lucky that every person who ran really cares deeply about the community, and that doesn't happen in every place. So we're really fortunate. So thank you to all the candidates for running, and congratulations to the winners. I shot some texts off last night, and as we told the candidates in our introduction that we do for them as staff, we do have an 80-hour-long orientation program for each of the candidates. And when Tim Henney did that 4 years ago, he said that it just gave him an introspection into every department. And it's a self-guided, we give them the syllabus, basically, and they go out and do it on their own. And they meet with every department head. They meet with different people all across the city. And they basically have an opportunity to learn all the ins and outs of city operations.
So did you get to vote in this election? I know you're between houses.
I did get to vote in this election specifically because I am now a city resident, and my husband and I are looking to make that permanent. We're in transitional housing right now, and we've been house hunting vigorously.
Yeah. So now that Andy has won the mayor's seat, that leaves the extra seat on the council. So how does that get filled?
Well, just like you heard from the school board, the city council, mayor and city council will appoint, the new mayor and city council will appoint someone to fill that seat. And just like the school board said, that's not something that they can talk about in closed session. So it's a decision that they'll have, I'm sure, a series of one-on-one conversations, or they'll just, you know, they'll kind of figure out who's interested and who might be the best fit.
So people have to apply. Is that how it works? Or do you just take Josh Hobson since he was in third place?
Do you know, it's not a, the city council has no requirement of who they appoint other than it be a city resident. In the past, so for example, Dick Peake, when they appointed him to fill the seat when Candy Erickson passed away, that was a decision that they made as a group.
And again, that would happen with Steve Joyce's appointment to the Planning Commission as well. People would apply. And
for that one, and I'm not sure, you know, I have to check in with City Attorney Mark Harrington on the, I don't know if they technically have to apply or if the City Council can simply ask people. My guess is there'll be an application process. For Planning Commission, there will definitely be an application process. So the Planning Department and City Council will coordinate, and they'll open that up and do a series of interviews, et cetera.
Okay, let's turn to parking. Kenzie Colson, the city has created two new parking zones, one at the library and one at the Milwini parking lot. This is next to the skate park there. The other, the new Homestake employee parking lot. Both are free parking but require some kind of registration.
Well, the Homestake employee lot will require registration by Main Street employees, and this is a key solution for many of the night workers who will be subject to the demand-based paid parking program launching December 15th. Creating the enforcement zone is a necessary step just to make sure that we can protect that lot from abuse, and in this case, it will be preserved for those Main Street employees. Now, the library and Milwini lots, we have not had discussions about how the enforcement will work. However, we are proactively creating the zone because of some complaints we've heard from the library board. They've told us that there are quite a few skiers who parked in the library lot last winter. That lot is, of course, for library building patrons, and Milwini Skate Park is for the adjacent facilities. And so to see long-term parkers take parking away from library patrons is a concern, and we're just trying to get ahead of it by this small step. When we have the discussions about how enforcement might work, we will be back to council.
So do you have a plan, though? I mean, it would be like a limited parking time. Is that what you're talking about?
There's no plan at this time, but what we anticipate is that there would be a time restriction and or validations. And so those interacting with the library building or facilities in a 2 or 3 hour time period would park as normal, perhaps interact with the meter there. But again, the discussion hasn't happened yet.
So do we do it? We are putting boxes up there?
There are meters there. And that was a step we took just, again, to be ahead of the problem. We know that this program in Main Street may squeeze and exacerbate what the library is already experiencing. So we're trying to get ahead of every issue that may come up, and that's been our initiative the whole time.
All right. Anything else that people should know about those parking lots? Again, it's homestakeparking@gmail.com in order to get a permit in order to park there?
That's correct, and it's an easy registration. All we need is your name, your business name, and your license plate.
Now, are you going to verify those?
We are, yes. But we want this to be an easy process for the employees, and so it's meant to be just a simple step.
Another item to do with parking for tomorrow's meeting, staff's recommendation to approve a contract with the ABM Parking Services, a $105,000 contract to do what?
This is a standard agreement. The city requests additional services and assistance with events specific to parking and traffic mitigation. And in this case, the city's actually worked with ABM Parking Services for many years. But their contract is up, and we issued a revised RFP, and they came to the table. So often when Sundance is here or Kimball Arts Festival is here, you may not recognize that there are additional support staff in the garage and in the vicinity, but they're out there, and they're helping keep the flow. They assist in residential areas to ensure that taxis and other vehicles not park where they shouldn't be parking.
So what are we talking, just Sundance, Arts Festival, 4th of July, Halloween? Is that it? Or
in the past, it was just Sundance and Kimball Arts Festival. Now it's grown to be potentially more events. But this contract gives the city some leeway in assigning staffing based on the supplemental plan review, which happens for every event through the council process.
Okay. And then you're also amending the code to decrease the number of people from a carpool, 3 to 2.
Correct. Yes. We've been at numerous council meetings, done quite a bit of outreach. And so we know that the carpool program is suggested to operate with occupants of 2 per vehicle. And this code amendment tidies this up and is the final step in making that the plan.
Okay. And then you're going to add to the contract that we have with Dixon Resources, what, just to finish finish it up, or we didn't get everything done, or?
Well, we got what we needed to get done, but we would like to extend Dixon's agreement and be prepared for the coming chapter. We talk about December 15 as the conclusion of our construction phase, yet this project is really just beginning. It will require constant assessment. We know that we're proactively trying to think of everything that might go wrong, but we also want to be prepared if we get something wrong or there's a challenge that we hadn't anticipated. And having that advice on hand, I think, will be really beneficial for staff and residents so that we can take quick action.
So you have your outreach coordinator going around talking to different people. Is she bringing those back to you, those concerns, like the one with from KPCW?
Absolutely. So we have quite a few folks on the street, and Linware Peak has been a rock star out there, door to door. And sometimes our interactions involve one person at a business, and sometimes it's 30 people. But we've learned quite a bit from these interactions, and we have comments tracked. And we're also encouraging folks to interact with us via the website. There is a very easy button to click at parkcity.org/parking. Providing feedback in that manner is the easiest way to make sure that your voice is heard, and we are listening.
Okay. I just didn't see her writing anything down when she met with us, so I was wondering if she'd gotten all of our concerns. In terms of the meeting, Diane, on Monday to discuss a proposed wildlife crossing structure north of the McPullen Barn, did you get an update on that? What, any kind of idea what kind of turnout we got?
I don't. You know, that was a request from a citizen, and our neighborhood traffic mitigation program handles everything from a request from a stop sign to a speed bump to a wildlife crossing or a people crossing. And that's a public process, and I really appreciate the fact that folks have brought this. You know, wildlife crossings are incredibly expensive. That being said, we all know that's the area going from basically the Quarry Mountain area across by the White Barn, that is an area where wildlife cross. And so there are multiple ways to address that, and a wildlife crossing is one of them, and that's where you build a structure that goes over the road that has typically grass on it and is pretty wide so that the wildlife will actually use it. And there may be other options that we could do, such as notifications in some communities. They actually, I don't see us doing that here, but they actually put trackers on they put tracking collars on the elk, and the system at the highway alerts people when one's near the road.
Yeah. Is it something staff thinks is needed?
I don't think staff has rendered an opinion on this yet. I think the biggest issue is going to be the cost, if that is something that is of interest. Now it's a state highway, and it's not clear if we could get state support for that.
And thinking of how long it's taken to get something like that further down 224 with
right.
regard to, I mean, we've got money into that for Basin Rec to get some kind of crossing or underground tunnel.
And that's a pedestrian one. And I do believe there has been support at the state level for a wildlife crossing on Highway 80. Mm-hmm.
All right. And finally, I just wanted to ask the guards. You put up a big digital sign, the guardsman gate now locked. So those only who have paid money to receive a key to the gate can access Bonanza Flat. So have we figured out a way that how those of us who are paying for it will be able to access it in the winter, or we just won't get to? I mean, is there a parking lot that people could park at so that, we can't even ski up the road anymore because now it's paved all the time, or plowed and paved?
Right. And staff is actually looking at that issue quite seriously. The issue of keys is for people who live up there, where it is a state road, UDOT has made an agreement with that neighborhood that people can get keys. And the road, though, is not you typically need either some type of you tip. Through most of the winter, you can't get up there with a car. So most of the people have snowmobiles, et cetera, and the keys really just help them to figure out where to park. The city is actually working, and the Heinrich Dieters and Logan Wild are working in conjunction with Wendy Fisher of Utah Open Lands, and there's a whole committee that works on this that includes members of COSAC, the Citizens Open Space Advisory Committee for the city. And what they're looking at is what kind of shuttles could be run up there. Can we run shuttles from the Old Town Transit Center so that people who want to go cross-country ski could get up there? So that is something that we're looking at specifically for this winter.
Okay. Well, we'll follow up. Hey, News Time, 8:45. Well, the Park City Museum will be opening up its new education and collection center next week. In the studio with details, I have Museum Director Sandra Morrison. Good morning.
Thank you, Leslie.
So let's talk about when and where that happens.
So that's Friday, November 17th at 5 to 7:30. And our new building is located at 2079 Sidewinder Drive. And, of course, we're a nonprofit. So $2.5 million later, thanks to the community, we've raised all the money. And so we're going to have a bash to celebrate. And, of course, this isn't replacing the museum. This is our off-site facility. We're pretty much outgrowing the museum and nowhere to expand on Main Street, obviously. So we're going to store our collections there, have education programs there, workshops, you name it. Anything that we need a lot of space to do something will be down there.
Right. So that will be open then after the 17th?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. On a regular basis, just open as we have things scheduled. And we have a full menu of activities coming up starting this Saturday. So we've been selected by the Smithsonian to host one of their traveling exhibitions called The Way We Worked. And so we're opening that up this Saturday at 11 o'clock. We'll have an opening celebration. So that's this Saturday, the 11th. And then tonight we have Steve Leatham and Dave Nicholas talking about Abandoned Ship, which was the crash of the B-18 bomber on Iron Mountain in 1941. And then next Wednesday, the 15th, we have Matt Basso coming up from the University of Utah to talk in perspective about work in America and how Park City and Utah have fit into that history. We're also partnering with Park City Library to do a story time on November 16th at the library. And then also on the 16th, partnering with the Park City Film Series to show the film Dolores. Dolores Huerta was one of America's activists and founded one of the first farm workers unions with Cesar Chavez.
So are all of these events then being happening at the museum then or at the new space?
It's a mixture, yeah. So go online to our website to figure it all out because obviously the film series is happening at the Jim Santee Auditorium.
Yeah, but the thing happening on Saturday morning at 11.
It will be at the exhibit, which is at the museum.
At the museum, okay.
Yes, yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So for the grand opening then, this is for members only?
So we're encouraging everybody to buy a membership that comes, yes.
And how much are memberships?
And so friends and family is $100, and then we have other levels beyond that as well. But that gives you free year-round admission to the Park City Museum for four people. So you really only have to come twice, and you've paid for your admission. You've paid for your membership, yeah.
All right. So you won't be having any of these activities that you've got planned until after the 17th?
Yeah, after the grand, 17th. Yes. Yeah, we want to do the grand opening and celebrate first, yes.
Got
yep,
it.
Yep.
All right.
And then we also have a free day coming up this Tuesday, the 14th, is the free day. So come on by and see our new exhibition from the Smithsonian.
Okay. And what's that about?
And so it's called The Way We Worked. And it's actually been traveling every state. And so each state picks six museums to host it. So we were lucky to be chosen. And we're the last museum to host it in Utah. And, just a history of, work and work movements in the United States and exploring that through people's stories. And then our staff has worked to add on to that and presenting some of the stories of Park City workers. So, we have the woman that was the accountant at the Welsh Driscoll and Buck store, who had a profession as an accountant, around the turn of the last century, which is very unusual for a woman to actually have a career. Stories like that.
Okay, so free day, Tuesday the 14th.
Yes.
The hours are 11 to...
So we're open 10 to 6.
10 to 6.
10 to 6.
Okay. Well,
yep.
Congratulations on getting that new building done.
Yeah, we're very excited. So go on our website, parkcityhistory.org, and that'll give you the full menu. We have lots of activities coming up.
Okay.
So.
Sandra, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:49. It's the local news hour on KPCW.
Hi, this is Jason and Adam Cole from Cole Sports, supporting KPCW.
The Cole family is thrilled to celebrate our 35th winter season as a locally owned and operated business serving the Park City community.
Our team shares a strong passion for our customers, offering products and services to meet the needs of all skiers and snowboarders with 5 Park City locations.
Cole Sport, expect the unexpected.
Hi, this is Lauren Forsyth with Christopher K. Greenwood & Associates, supporting my hometown radio station, KPCW. Christopher K. Greenwood & Associates offers legal services in criminal, DUI, family, divorce, personal injury, and real estate. Christopher K. Greenwood & Associates at the Gateway Center, 655-3680.
Well, Park Record columnist, the public information officer for the Park City Hospital, and now author Amy Roberts has published her first book, Remorse. It'll be discussed at the first ever BYO Book Club meeting this week. Amy joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So is this BYOB just a single event, or is this something that's going to happen on a monthly basis?
You know, Claire Deslitz actually read my book and was really excited about it and sort of created this event. And we worked with Claudia McMullen over at Hugo Coffee. And so I don't know what their plan is, really. I'm honored to be their first featured author and that they chose my book to discuss. And I think if it's successful and people really enjoy it, they probably will.
Yeah. So this is happening when and where?
Tomorrow at 6:30 in the evening, and it's at Hugo Coffee, which is out in the Chamber building near the Junction.
Okay. Everyone invited?
Everyone's invited. You don't have to have read the book, although I hope you have bought it. But it's a great opportunity for people if you want to join a new book club, if you are looking to get involved in one, just want to meet new people. It's a great opportunity to come out, just be, you know, get social with other people that read, and It should be a good evening, no matter if you've read the book or not.
Yeah. Well, you have books there for sale?
I have books there for sale as well, yeah. And, come be part of the discussion. And we're encouraging people that have a book club anywhere in the city just to have this be their November meeting and bring your entire book club. So.
Okay. So tell us, the book is Remorse.
The
tell
book
us
is
a little
Remorse.
Bit about it.
It's available on Amazon. It's fiction, so it's a bit of a departure. Well, maybe not. Some people might consider my column fictionalized with frequency, but so it's sort of a suspenseful thriller, and it's a very easy read. So you actually, if you downloaded it on your Kindle today, you probably could have it finished by tomorrow night even.
Okay. So it was written on a dare, is my understanding?
It was kind of written on a dare, yeah. I had some friends say, I dare you to write a book. And I was like, I'm not usually one to turn down a challenge. So, okay, here we go. We'll see what happens. And it was a very interesting process. I learned a lot through it, made a lot of mistakes, of course, along the way. But the final product is out and ready, and it's exciting.
Yeah. So you say it's a suspense. Give us the setting.
So there's really 3 main characters, and the story weaves between each character's perspective. And I'll just tell you that each one of them make a decision that is very personal to them, and they don't really understand that the consequences for the other characters involved. And it's kind of suspenseful how all of those decisions collide, and they end up having to reconcile their remorse for having made the decisions that they did that affected another person.
So it's self-published?
It is, sure. Yeah. I'm not known for having a lot of patience. And, I'm like, God grant me patience now. And I went through the literary agent side, and it just was going to be a couple years. And I thought, well, that dare that I was on, it probably expires at some point. So I went ahead and did it via Amazon. And my mom is a college English professor, so I had a built-in editor, which was really nice.
Okay, so that's what I was going to ask you. Yeah. So she did the editing for you.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah. So she's, I always joke that I used to get spanked with an AP style book when I was a kid. She's got about 50 years in English teaching, so that was easy to do.
Let me have you put your hospital hat on for just a second.
Oh, sure.
At 7 o'clock tonight, you've got an opioid epidemic mm-hmm. presentation. This is going to be done by the IHC CEO, Dr. Mark Harrison.
Yes.
Talking about what? I mean, who should be there?
You know, really, it's open to anyone in the community. We hope to have a packed house for him. I think the opioid epidemic is so widespread that it's hard to believe that any of us don't know somebody who's been affected. Even if we might, that might not be something we know, they might be hiding it. But there's a good chance that you or someone you know has been touched by it. And so it's really going to be sort of a history of how we got there and then really a proactive plan to how to get out of it. Intermountain is taking a lot of really progressive initiatives to help minimize the impact of opioids and reduce misuse, abuse, and accidental overdose. So I think it's going to be very informative. Dr. Harrison is a phenomenal speaker. He's very engaging, and there's going to be a live audience-driven Q&A after he speaks. So you'll really have an opportunity to ask any question about it.
Okay. This is at the Blair Education Center, which is on the kind of the easternmost.
It's on the north, the new north building on the ground floor. So the bottom floor. We'll have signage inside. You can park anywhere. But yeah, it starts at 7 o'clock tomorrow night. We hope you come. I'm sorry, tonight.
Tonight.
I'm getting my events mixed up. Tonight is opioids. Tomorrow is books.
Okay. Hey, Amy, thanks.
Thank you so much.
Well, the Peace House hosting a fundraiser, the fourth annual Bling Fling Boutique. In the studio with details, I have Julie Joyce, one of the board members for Peace House, along with the director of development and marketing for Peace House, Sally Topper. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So when and where is the fling happening?
Well,
Sally?
We're starting out on Thursday with a preview party at Park City Community Church from 5:30 to 8 o'clock. And you can still get preview party tickets on our website for $25 in advance today. It goes up to $30 at the door. And we will be having appetizers, mocktails, and a silent auction that evening. You get your first pick of bling. We have incredible, these are just amazing trays of sterling silver fine jewelry that is selling for $10, $15. Someone found a Tiffany necklace with a little bean on it last year for less than $20. So, and I have my eye on a turquoise ring. It's gorgeous.
Yeah. So how does it work? You're going to be open Thursday with the preview and then it continues to the weekend?
Yep.
Friday and Saturday, we're still at the Park City Community Church. We open at 10 o'clock Friday morning and we run till 6 p.m. Admission is $5 cash at the door. And then again on Saturday from 10 to 2.
All right. Any idea how much stuff you have to sell?
Wow. A lot. I mean, we've been collecting and working for months to sort it, to market, to put it on displays. And it's an incredible array of scarves, belts, handbags, fine jewelry, costume jewelry. Some things, most things very gently used. Some things that are brand new with tags.
Yeah, it looked like a good deal at the time, and there it sat.
It's a great time to do your Christmas shopping. Come get it all done in one weekend.
Yeah, so you got it all marked. You've been working on it, you said, for a while. I remember looking for volunteers.
I think we're good on volunteers. There might be one or two spots left for the weekend. People can check on signup.com, but I think we're pretty good there.
Mostly women's stuff?
Largely women's stuff. We do have some men's jewelry, I believe.
Oh, we just got an incredible solid gold pocket watch that someone donated, and so we're not sure whether that's going to go at the price it needs to be at that sale or whether it will go somewhere else, but it's worth checking out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's see. What's the update on the campus?
Well, we have broken ground. We plan to be about 18 months out, and we have raised a significant amount of money to cover the cost of the building. I think those details will come out soon.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else you want to tell us then about Bling Fling?
Well, just be there. It's something you really shouldn't miss.
There's more information on our website at peacehouse.org, or you can follow us on Facebook.
And don't forget, it's Live PC, Give PC. You can join us. We're going to have a giving station at Bling Fling.
Okay. Sally and Julie, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.